And now, direct from Toronto in the Humble and Fred studios, it's time for NFI, No Fun Intended. It's the podcast that appreciates good music, fine wine, expensive art, and beautiful architecture. And you thought the hosts were a couple of uncouth, uncultured dolts. Here they are, the scholarly Mark Hebscher and the very erudite Liz West.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Phil. No Fun Intended is brought to you by Cameron's Brewing in Oakville, celebrating 20 years as an award-winning craft brewer, and it's available where you buy your beer. So have you ever walked by an old house that you just thought was, needs to be torn down, only to find out that suddenly it's been designated a historical building? Who makes that decision? Why? What does it mean if you buy a house that is deemed a heritage property? Today, we've got on the show architect Lauren Rose. He's going to demystify heritage and historical designations. Also...
train collisions. Ever been in one before?
Train wrecks, like the show we're putting together.
Let's put it this way. It's still on the rails, but barely. Train collisions are becoming more common. Wait till you hear what they're doing in Japan, Seoul, to prevent such disasters. Wait till you hear. First, though, Liz.
Yes.
What was the last movie you saw that you were disappointed in? You said, big hype for the movie, man. This is going to be great. Good question. You're like, I can't wait to get out of here. And I'm talking at the theaters. I'm not talking Netflix at home where you can just say, that's it for that and move on to your next movie. You actually physically went. You actually maybe went to VIP like we did, my wife and I, where these big wide seats and they have tables, seat service, and it's an intimate.
18 and over allowed in.
Big movie with big stars, big. Mm. Ever happened to you?
I'm trying to think, and nothing's coming to mind.
Because the movie was so bad.
Maybe
you're
that's
trying
what
to put it
is.
Out
I've
of your mind.
It out of my mind.
The experience.
How about you? Did you have a bad experience?
I'd like to do that with this movie. I can't just yet, all right? Because here's why. Greatest actor in the world.
Who?
Greatest actress in the world.
Greatest director
in the world.
Oh, okay. Great.
That's the holy trinity right there. The greatest actor, actress, and director.
So I know Meryl Streep's in the film.
And Tom Hanks. And the director is a Spielberg guy. How could it not be a fabulous movie? Before anyone saw the movie, 5 stars. 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. The movie's not even out yet, right? This is the type of movie where, let's say it was a book, where they would go to the author and say, look, we'll give you $50 million before you even write the book.
To write the book.
Because you're so good. So this is what happened with this movie, right? It's called The Post. It's Tom Hanks. He plays the part of Ben Bradley, the managing editor of the Washington Post. Before the Washington Post got involved in the Watergate thing and became famous, they were this little newspaper in Washington. Meryl Streep plays the part of Mrs. Pinchon from the Lou Grant Show. She's the publisher. She's, she's an older lady, and her husband owned the paper, and he died. And before that, her father-in-law owned the paper, and he was
she's a female.
No, it was actually her father. It was actually her father, right. It was her father. So she's the matron, she's the matriarch, whatever it is. She owns the newspaper. She's the Mrs. Pinchon from Lou Grant, right? And the Ben Bradley part of Hanks, in the movie All the President's Men, was played by Jason Robards. I don't know if he won an Academy Award. He was so good. Crusty old editor. I'm looking at Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks is not a crusty old editor.
No.
I don't care if you grow his hair long from 1971. No. And it's Spielberg too. So it's got to be great. It was shit. I was so disappointed.
Did it win anything at the Golden Globes?
How could it? It just came out.
No, was it nominated?
Well, I don't think so.
I guess it's because of the nomination period.
See, normally a film like that comes out December 27th.
This just came out.
Contention.
This just came out.
Oh, I might have to Google that. Carry on. I'm going to Google it.
Google what?
When it came out.
Well, you think it came out in December?
It just
came out.
It would be really weird if it came out in January because big films like that are never released in January.
Interesting. Okay,
it's always December.
So, I, Tanya, which is the other movie we're going to see, I think was up for some awards because I believe it did start just around Christmas time. But this one here, I just think, I don't know when it started, but I do know this. I was so disappointed that I thought, maybe it's just me. Maybe I thought that Tom Hanks was the greatest actor here in 2018.
Maybe I thought that
Meryl Streep, if she was part of a movie, it's gold, right? Maybe I thought that Steven Spielberg had never, ever produced or directed a lousy movie.
Right.
Wrong, wrong, and wrong. Liz, had I done my research prior to going to the movie with my wife, and I wanted to see I, Tonya, badly. She was like, no, let's see The Post. you know, it's a newspaper business. It's about story, Vietnam War and cover up, and we like that history stuff anyway. And look at how can you
just
go wrong
like
with
the
these actors?
The film that came out last year about the Boston paper.
Right, about the priest, yeah.
I forget what it was called, but it's the whole idea of the media.
So I did a little research, as I want to do. Oh. Tom Hanks, okay? Anyway, by the way, this movie took in like $2.9 million. That's it, the first week. Like,
wow.
That's it. That's,
you know, maybe it was released in January for a reason.
The 12th, according to the people.
January 12th.
Yep.
So there you go.
So that tells you something there.
So now, should I have known? If I were to say to you, hey, Liz, I'm going to go see The Post, would you have said, oh, no, geez, they just released it in January. Never see a movie they release in January.
It's weird.
If it was any good, they would have released it in December,
right? They would release it in December. Titanic was released in December.
There you go.
Star Wars, like, it's a big month
for big films. So right off the bat, I should have called you.
Leonardo DiCaprio, you will only see him in a film come out in December.
Hanks, Streep, Spielberg. January 12th, right?
Bad
film?
Yeah.
Okay, so that should be my first clue right there.
Yes.
So now I go back and think, okay, wait a second. Tom Hanks, he's pretty good. No, I'm thinking of his son, Colin. He's really good.
You like Colin Hanks?
Really like Colin Hanks.
I don't love him.
Well, so here's the thing. I saw him in Fargo. He was fabulous. He was unbelievable in Dexter. Mm. Sensational, right? Anyway.
Okay.
So Tom Hanks' last movie before this was called The Circle. On Rotten Tomatoes, 16%.
Yeah.
Okay? It made $20.5 million. Inferno was the year before that. Tom Hanks. Inferno.
Inferno?
22% on Rotten Tomatoes, made $34 million.
I don't remember that film.
That's
how
bad it was.
I remember the towering Inferno.
Right, that's how bad it was.
In 1977. Yeah.
Right.
That was an amazing movie.
Now, just to give you some perspective here, he was awesome in Sully.
Yeah.
86% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And let's be fair. It was the story that was so good.
Yeah.
And like any reasonable actor could have pulled it off.
Thank you. Thank you, Liz. 125
million. You could have played Sully, Mark.
I think
that's
I could have.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
I had the Boston accent, but maybe. 125 million? That's 125 million is okay at the box. Nothing wrong with that, okay? Misery Loves Company he was in 2014. 36% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't even know what that
film 5.8 million. Bomb. Now, had you gone going, you know, oh, now, this is the one I remembered the most because I think we talked about it on the podcast. I went and saw Cloud Atlas, the most horrible
movie. That's a terrible
movie.
Title.
Horrible
First of all,
movie.
A terrible name
it's
for
still,
a film.
It still got 66% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What
it
is
was
Cloud Atlas?
It was horrible.
What does that even mean?
Oh, my God. It's just such a bad movie. They're in this different civilization. It's horrible.
Terrible name. Names
terrible.
Are important.
Still made $22 million, 66%.
$22
million? I know.
That was his salary.
Right. And
that's what it cost to, like, paint the sets.
And I had forgotten about this movie as well because it was so forgettable. It was called Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. He's in that. 46% on Rotten Tomatoes. It made $31.9 million. Now, there's some pretty crummy movies there.
So
with the exception of Sully.
Bombs.
He's been making bombs.
He's been making bombs.
But wait a second now. Meryl Streep. Who gets a pass more than Tom Hanks? Because she's won more Academy Awards than any other one.
Yeah.
She gets a pass.
Okay.
Okay? 2015, she was in a movie called Suffragette. 72% Rotten Tomatoes. Made $7 million.
Yeah,
thanks for coming out. Thanks for coming out, Meryl.
Yeah.
She plays a witch in a movie called Into the Woods.
That's like a kid's kind of
yeah,
movie,
71%
right?
on Rotten Tomatoes. Made $89 million.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's
she was in...
Kid's movie.
She was in The Giver. 35% on Rotten Tomatoes, made $33 million.
Yeah,
she was in August,
terrible.
Osage County, 65% on Rotten Tomatoes, $29
million. Yeah.
And her performance as Margaret Thatcher in The Iron Lady might have been one of the worst performances I had ever seen. It made $30 million.
Yeah.
It lost a fortune. She was terrible.
Yeah.
So, that's those two.
Yeah.
I won't even go into the Spielberg bombs.
Good research,
because
Mark.
There's so many Spielberg bombs. And I'm talking of all of his projects.
Mm-hmm.
Spielberg really hasn't done anything in the last 5 years.
That's
worth anything at all. So I didn't do my research until after I saw the movie, and now I'm telling all of you, don't go see The Post. It's horrible. It's awful.
You know, Mark, it's like when people stop you in the street and think you still are working on your sports show. What was this with Jim Taddy? What was it called?
Sportsline.
Sportsline. They're like, hey, are you still doing that show, Sportsline? It's like, haven't done that in how many years?
That's okay.
But your reputation carries forward.
Precedes
they still
me, yeah.
They still see you as that person. When we see Meryl Streep, Steven Spielberg,
mm-hmm.
and Tom Hanks together, we think of the great work they did.
Right.
You know, 20 years ago.
Life is like a box of chocolates. Meryl Streep and Mamma Mia, for example.
Oh, there's tons. There's tons. Between all of them.
But you know what I mean? So we're still carrying that. We didn't even see these crummy movies.
So you obviously, the distributor, I think MGM or whatever, said, this sucks. We're going to wait till January. We're going to bring it out the week after the Golden Globes so that nobody's talking about it.
Exactly.
And the gap between the Golden Globes and the Emmy Awards, right, is such that, you know, throw a couple of movies in there, maybe you'll catch fire. This is crap.
Well, imagine how they feel. Because they're not expecting to be a January release. Right. That's like action films. That's like B-action film time.
The other thing I figured out about this is Spielberg, I think, has a thing with the show Fargo. Because he uses two people from Fargo. He uses Jesse Plemons, who's fabulous, who was in Friday Night Lights, Breaking Bad. Really terrific actor. You'll know him as soon as you see him. He was in Fargo and he's in this. And they use Bob Odenkirk. Like, you know, from Better Call Saul and Fargo.
Right.
On this, he plays a reporter.
Directors have their people they
miscast.
Like.
Both of them miscast. And he's got Tom Hanks.
Oh, you
whose
mean
son,
he
Colin
put them
Hanks
roles
is in.
That didn't make sense?
Yeah, poorly cast. Yeah,
okay.
Poorly. I mean, if I want a crusty editor from the Washington Post. Tom Hanks is not a crusty editor.
Oh, I know.
And also when he's affected by, because he's got to have a voice like this, he doesn't talk
There's
like that.
There's so many
he
people
doesn't
that
talk
could have
like
done that.
Meryl Streep talks like she talks in the movie. She's a publisher. She's
but
a well-educated woman.
From these actors, like they sometimes can be typecast, like John Lithgow playing Winston Churchill, for example, in The Crown. Yes. That was unexpected.
Well, sure, because he was in Third Rock from the Sun.
Right, you expect him to be like very that. Limber and kind of awkward.
It was a light,
but he's a character actor. Hair. He did a great. But not Tom Hanks in this case. Okay, he's not going to be ever in my mind a crusty. I think of him in the movie Big. He's a kid, right?
Yeah, or and
Forrest
or
Gump
those,
or whatever.
You know,
yeah, those kind of romantic.
Lovable,
comedy.
You know.
Anyway, that's my thing. That's my beef. That's my beef. Right there with that movie. Don't go see the
I'm
post.
Not going to go
sucks.
See it. Thanks for
it's
saving
terrible.
Me.
You're
$20
welcome.
Bucks, $20
You're
bucks.
More than welcome.
Okay. So, we've got raccoons in the city, and my neighbor the other day was like, you know, can I have some of your dog's poop? I'm like, why? She said, because if you smear dog's poop, she understood, or put dog's poop on her deck, that would scare the raccoons away. So it's interesting how, you know, there's these sort of all-natural methods of keeping animals away from things, which leads to this story in Japan. There's apparently there's an issue in Japan where deer are attracted to train tracks. Mm-hmm. The reason being is they need iron in their diet, and I guess once a train's passed over, it leaves little tiny
fragment,
shards,
right.
fragments of iron, so they lick the tracks to get the iron. Unfortunately, it's like not a good place to be.
No, it's not like licking salt.
When a train's
it's not like
coming.
A salt block. Yeah.
So they have this problem with deer getting hit by trains. So they've come up with this really kind of ingenious idea, which is originally it was they were going to smear lion feces.
Okay, yeah.
On the track. So that's why I brought up the dogs and the raccoons. So now they've decided to do this instead. Hear that? Okay. So the idea, 20 seconds of a dog barking is enough to scare away the deer.
So wait, the train goes whipping by, and as it's going by all these deer, it all of a sudden emits this sound, and the deer go, Jesus Christ, it's a dog!
Before. It has to be before. So,
well, yeah, obviously.
And actually what they do is they blast the sound of a deer snorting, which gets the deer. That's it. That is it. Good job. So the deer snorting sound stops the deer. Deer poke their head up.
Right.
Then they have the barking sound for 20 seconds, and then the deer's head for the hills. And the deers are being saved. They've decreased the amount of deer around the tracks substantially. So that's kind of cool.
Well, it's crazy because Japan, you know, unlike other countries, has a profitable rail system. Ironically, they just have so many trains. They've got public companies running trains. They've got private companies running trains, department stores specifically.
So it matters.
It does matter.
It really matters.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody needs to have, you know, smashing into a deer when you're trying to get from A to B.
If deer
Nobody
were walking
wants
around
to do
the
that.
401, for example, we'd be worried too.
Exactly.
Right?
And now we have a solution. So isn't that an ingenious idea? Who came up with the idea? It's like, let's try a cat meowing. Nope, that's not working.
Well, I do
scream at them. Scream at them. Get off the tracks.
I do know this. In many of the vineyards in Niagara region, the vineyards, they have the sound of a shotgun going off every 5 to 10 seconds to scare away the crows because the crows think they're being shot at. So they don't, if they are inclined to go on the vines and maybe peck away at these grapes, that sound coming every 5 or 8 seconds or whatever of a shotgun will scare them away. So
and the neighbors and the
well, there's no real neighbors to worry about here. You've got a big huge vineyard, so people understand.
Tell that to the neighbors.
But I remember playing golf and going, "What's that? Who's shooting off guns?"
Exactly.
And it was right next to the vineyard, and the guy kind of went, "Oh yeah, that keeps the crows away." And I went, "Really? They should try that in Japan with the deer." So I really came up with the first idea, but then I just never follow through with it.
You're following that.
Yeah, so it's, I guess it's the scarecrow thing, except you're adding audio to it, because the picture on the front of the train is a picture like of a like a lion or a dog or whatever. Like so instead of the front of the, you see the front of the train, so instead of it looking like nothing, they've actually painted an animal to make it
a
so if
giant,
the deer,
you know, witch in the wardrobe kind of size animal.
So now the deer, if it doesn't, it's not paying attention to the deer snort, it doesn't care about the dog barking, if it looks up and sees this animal coming at it at 100 miles an hour, it's for sure going to get off the
tracks. So it could be a labradoodle and it's still scary.
Why don't they just put little bowls of iron shards in the forest?
Yeah, why not?
Why don't they just feed the deer what they need where they live?
So so you're telling me that on the salt blocks that they put out there, because deer are always looking to lick salt, right? And generally what happens, what I know is that anyone that's got cottages where there might be deer, they put a block of salt. It's usually blue. Like out, I don't know, 100 feet maybe from their window, so that when the deer do come, they can, oh, look at how cute the deer are.
Basically, it's their bird feeder. Yeah, it's their bird feeder.
Correct. But the deer knew, and they're looking for salt. And I think part of that is they're at the train tracks. They may be getting a little more iron than they thought, right? But the licking part is looking, the licking is maybe their salt there. I'll lick to find out if there's
sort of like Centrium for wildlife.
So I think that's very interesting, because I'd like to be able to ride the train, or any public transit for that matter, and not have to worry about hitting any wildlife. That would be big for me.
Would be nice.
That would be a really great thing for me. So I'm glad that we don't have any of that to worry about. All right, so it's time to introduce our guest. By the way, the show is brought to you by Cameron's Brewing. We have for our guest a lovely four-pack sampler here of Cameron's Cosmic.
Yeah.
Hey, you haven't been introduced yet, buddy. You can't do that.
Just
to let you know what's going on. The beer comes first before the guest. Cosmic Cream Ale, Black Forest Dark Lager, Amber Red Ale, Dark and Sticky IBA, right? That's India Brown Ale.
Yes.
And, of course, my favorite, which isn't part of the four-pack because I want them all, Captain's Log.
Yep.
Captain's Log. Now, introducing our guest, who, by the way, is known as one of the top architects, the residential architects, not just in the city, not just in the county or the province, but in the entire country. Ladies and gentlemen, it's architect Lauren Rose.
Woo! Very nice to be here.
How's that for an intro?
It was pretty good. I was really impressed.
Did I hit the nail on the head?
I think you hit it really hard. It was good. Thank you.
Did you need someone to tell you, at what point did you know that you were a damn good residential architect?
Wow.
Like, did you design a particular home, for example, and say, that's the one? Had I not done that, and had someone else not seen that, I wouldn't be where I am today.
That's a good question. I think it was more a growing thing. So I was always proud of what I did, and you always want to try to do better the next time.
Sure.
So people see something, and, oh, we like this house. Can you copy it for us?
Right.
No, I can do better for you, and it goes
from
there.
Nice.
Oh.
Which leads to a story that Liz and I and Phil had talked about a while ago about one homeowner who thought that someone had stolen their idea and wanted to sue in Forest Hill. This happened. I don't even remember. Do we mention the names of the people, Liz? All I know is we were both
snooty neighbor one. And,
right.
And
don't mention it again. I know both parties.
So you know both parties. So when you first heard this, did you go, okay, now, I mean, that's, you know, it's jumped the shark. It's ridiculous that someone would think that someone stole their idea, right? That they literally stole an idea of how to do gabling or a roof or something like that. And then when these people walked by, they went, hey, that's our house. They stole our idea. And then they went and sued.
So the house that was copied is a beautiful house. The product of it, in my opinion, is awful.
Oh, no.
I would have had no clue that it was that house.
Right. Right.
No clue.
It's bits and pieces of resemblance.
So what were they
but
thinking?
It's not.
The biggest problem with this, it was awful journalism. The Star should be embarrassed that they had that.
Tell
on
us
the
more.
Cover, the cover and the back of the front section.
Well, no kids were kidnapped that day.
No, nobody was kidnapped.
It was a slow news day.
It was a very slow.
What's the real story?
The real story is it is very probable that elements were copied. But what's the big deal? People take pictures of my houses all the time. I take pictures of other houses, of great architecture. That's what architecture is. It's a evolution of old styles and new styles. So the fact that the one owner thought that somebody was copying it, which he probably was, but it turned into something else. But he thought he had the rights to the architect's drawings. I own the rights to my drawings. In this case, the architect was dead. So I don't think he really cared.
Hmm.
But it was the owner's idea, and I think his lawyers too, that because the architect died, he owned the rights to those drawings and that design, which I disagree with. Anybody can sue for anything they want.
Right.
But it was really bad journalism, I thought. It embarrassed, I think, both parties. I believe there is an apology from the Star coming out.
To who?
Wait,
the Star got the story wrong, you're saying. They got it wrong.
Well, I think they painted both parties in a very terrible light.
Yeah, they sure did.
Yeah.
And from what we got from it, we did too. Right?
I would say that truly they probably have really affected the parties involved, like in a way where they would have been embarrassed to be out in their neighborhood, talked about in the local shops, and maybe even psychologically, you know, having to have some counseling, because it was a bit of an attack. Like, you know, it was the public just condemned.
Despicable human
everybody
beings.
Was just,
everyone condemned. Yeah. I have no idea how many people sent me this link to this thing. And it wasn't, these people don't read the Star. It was on social media. That's how quick it happened.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this going on? No. I happened to know the house, the people. It was terrible. But I believe there is going to be a retraction. There was no need to put their pictures in.
No kidding.
It was just too much.
Yeah.
Much. It was like the
right.
Hatfields and the McCoys.
Well,
but it was their
story.
Problem, their business. Let them work it out.
When we read the story, I mean, of course, you go, wow, this, you know, it's odd to hear about neighbors going after each other in the first place. And then secondly, when you find the subject matter, you go, really? And so you paint kind of both parties as, like, what kind of creeps are they? And obviously, they're not creeps.
They're not.
And that's, you know.
But even worse, my own staff said, and they settled. I said, okay, they settled, but people assume that money was paid. Nobody knows that for a fact.
Right.
I have no idea.
Right.
And
it
so
just means they came
the settlement,
to an agreement.
We agreed to just drop it.
So you think.
I don't know if that's the case.
So you think the Star, after all this time, is going to print a retraction? You think the Toronto Star is going to say, you know, back in 2015, we wrote this story, and gosh,
well, the retractions are tiny.
I don't know what the retraction will say.
There's going to be no retraction.
You're probably right.
And the retraction may be something like this, way over buried in a corner somewhere in the print edition.
That's for sure.
That nobody reads anymore is going to say, correction.
Well, have you
not retraction, correction. The Star regrets the error. We did it, whatever, kind of a thing like that.
Maybe. There are people who wrote to the Star.
Yeah.
Telling them what bad journalism it was. It was irrelevant.
They're not going to print a retraction.
Okay.
But heritage is a big issue.
But before we get to that, I have a question for you. Have you seen Drake's house in Toronto, the one that's being built? Have you driven by it?
I have.
I have too. I think it's like an attraction almost. An attraction. Like my kids will say,
hey,
are we near Drake's house when we're driving home from hockey? I'm like, oh, okay. And he goes, let's go drive by. When I first saw it, I was like, wow. Why is he building something that looks like that? What's your take on it? It's kind of traditional, huh?
It's very traditional, and I think it's great. That's what Drake wanted, and that's what Drake got. That's what's beautiful about architecture. You can tell your architect whatever style you want. Sometimes the architect will influence it. Sometimes it won't. What I hate about this, and this is a big problem in the city of Toronto publishes the drawings on the internet for anyone to see. I think that's a complete invasion of privacy.
Privacy. That's interesting, yeah.
And went through social media. Do you think Drake was happy that his plans were online?
No, I don't think so.
It's awful.
Drake though, does have an influence in Forest Hill.
Yes, he does.
He went to Forest Hill High.
Yes, he did.
And many of his people, including his mother, are lifelong residents of that area.
Absolutely.
So,
which would be an affluent area for those who don't know Toronto.
And where, Lorne, a good number of your projects are located.
Yes. Are you saying that it's a slight that he chose Bridal Path over Forest Hill? What's the question?
Not at all. I'm saying that his influence was Forest Hill, not Bridal Path.
Right.
He didn't go up to Bridal Path and Coast Road and go, hey, that looks nice.
I think
Conrad Black's old place. I want to look like
he
that.
He copied one of your houses. I think that's what you're saying.
He
Mark.
Might have done that.
See, that's what I'm saying.
He's a fan.
He didn't come to see me. Exactly. Yeah. See, that's my point. My point is that, you, like you say, Lauren, nobody has a patent on anything.
Right.
You take a little from that. I don't know, that place on Dunvegan looked nice. I'll take a little of that. Oh, that turret's over there. And a little elements of that. And maybe some elements of Lauren Rose's finest work.
Do you think I should say something to the Star?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. No. But you must feel, when you see something that's built that agrees with your taste, homes that you've done before, It must make you feel pretty good.
You know what? That's the best part about being an architect. Someone once said to me, a lawyer, when he's done, he's left this world, what does he have? He has paper in boxes. When I'm done, I've left my mark on the world. Hopefully made it a better place and a more beautiful place. So that's the most rewarding part of my job.
So you are up against this thing, which is this heritage designation. Yeah. We live in a city with a lot of old buildings. And what surprises me is that there can be a building that is sort of innocuous. And until someone decides they want to buy it, somehow someone decides, oh my God, they're going to tear it down. That's my favorite Blank's convenience store for 50 years. And lo and behold, the city will whack a historical designation on it, which kind of handcuffs the owner. So can you explain, first of all, when does a building get that designation? What's the criteria?
So good question. So I'm a big proponent for heritage. I also have my problems with heritage and how people are using it to stop development. So houses can be designated historical and districts can be designated historical. I think people were trying to make it designated, but Rosedale is designated historical.
Right.
So every house there is rated A, B, or C, or unrated.
What does A, B, or C mean?
A is the highest level, then B, then C. So you can alter facades of C-rated houses. I found out later, unless it's on certain streets.
Uh-huh.
But you cannot alter an A-rated house. You can't do anything to the front of it. You might be able to do something to the back and the inside, no problem. But it has happened now that in areas that are not designated, that neighbors, to stop development, when we're developing a house, we have to go to Committee of Adjustment for variances. And neighbors would say, oh my God, I don't want to live beside construction. I don't want to tear down that. I love that house. I love looking at that house. Because typically, replacement houses are bigger and it affects the neighborhood. We try to make them fit in well. So it has happened in the past that neighbors have sneakily, if that's a word, behind my back and my client's back, tried to get the house designated historical.
Right.
It recently happened and they were successful. Yes.
Oh.
In Forest Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. So here's my client who
Did money change hands, do you think, in these decisions?
No, unless no, they paid off the counselor.
Well, let me ask you a question. If you didn't think it was possible, and then all of a sudden they said, hey, guess what? We got a historical designation. You think that the seas parted for these particular people? Or come on, we're talking about extremely wealthy areas.
And smart. Smart
and
people.
And really smart business
people.
And if I'm Liz ran for city council, okay? I'd like to think that if someone said, hey, Liz, if you can make this go away or make this happen, there's some money in your pocket, whatever. No.
But I can't say there's money, but that definitely happened with the counselor.
Influence. Yes.
So explain, what happened then? Your client had bought the property.
Right. So when I saw the property.
How old was it, by the way?
Approximately
100 years?
No, not quite. It was in a house and home magazine. So one of the criteria is who lived in it, who designed it, and are there any special events that happened in the house?
Oh!
And I guess who built it is possibly another
one. But who lived in it?
Maybe one day it'll be Lauren Rose designed it.
That's right.
Don't touch it!
So who lived in the house? Was it someone famous?
No.
Okay.
And even the architect was not that famous. So when I saw the house, when I got the commission, I asked the question, did you check if this is historically designated? And my client's answer was he did, and it was not. So we thought, no problem. We can proceed.
Of course.
So we had the development. We designed the house and went to Committee of Adjustment. We were going to Committee of Adjustment. And the neighbors asked us to defer for consultation. I knew the neighbors. And they were the ones that I spoke to were very honorable. And I thought their intentions were indeed good.
Yeah, as you thought.
I'm not going to label anyone as being the rat because I don't know who it was who started it.
Yep.
I have my ideas. But they delayed us just enough time to go to the counselor and go to Heritage and have the house designated to be looked at.
Oh.
It is yet to be designated, as far as I know, even
as
today.
But it puts a hold on everything.
Right.
You can't do anything.
It's like you're waiting for an MRI. You're waiting.
Exactly.
You've got to wait.
Exactly. So my client bought this house worth a great deal of money. As soon as it's designated, in my opinion, the value dropped by a half to a third.
Wow.
He's stuck with the house now. He can't do anything with it.
Wow.
I mean, he could renovate it.
Can you tell us why it was designated? What was the quality that deemed it?
There was a report. When you make an application to renovate a heritage house, you have to do a heritage study.
Yeah. Oh,
so they go through when it was built, who built it, all the criteria.
Right.
The best that I could, it was an attractive house, but not any strong style. It was kind of modern at the time, almost Art Deco. But it was in a magazine, and it was designed by an architect who was pretty good, but not great.
All you architects say the same thing about other architects.
Wait a second.
Was there a great party there or something?
Yeah,
no significant event.
No,
it was in a magazine.
Really and truly?
That's I read the report, and that's...
Oh, my God.
Anyways, it's the councillor helped push this through, which I think is not great.
Curious. It's curious.
Considering the same councillor is allowing a public school that was built in the 70s that I think has great historical significance to be torn down instead of being renovated.
What school is that?
I don't know the name, but it's on...
It's in Rosedale?
No, Young and Davisville. I don't think it fronts onto Davisville. 1970s design,
really?
I think, or yeah. Might have been a little bit
I'm
early.
I'm going there tonight. Young and I used to live at Young and Davisville. I know the one. It's on Davisville.
There?
It's on Davisville.
It's very cool,
Davisville
modern
public.
Roofs. It looks like origami.
Davisville Public School.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on Davisville.
Yeah.
Really?
And he's allowed this to be torn down.
Wow.
And the neighbors are trying to save it. It's the exact opposite of what
That's
happened
crazy.
In our case.
My concern with building new buildings in residential neighborhoods is I always want to know, how all these nice, I'm not going to say all post-war bungalows, but all these nice, you know, and then there's one home that's...
A monster.
How did they...
Oh, I hate that term. Don't ever say that term.
What, monster?
Monster.
I wasn't going to say it. That was Liz's line.
Right.
It was an enormous...
I didn't want to go there.
It was an enormous eyesore. An enormous... Well, because you're driving along... No, here's trees are a certain size, mm-hmm. homes are a certain size, lots are a certain size, they're two stories, and all of a sudden on the corner is this... Oh, my God. Who allowed that? Number one, who allowed it? Number two is if I'm a neighbor, I'm like, I can't. Like, I would be outraged.
Are you a NIMBY, Mark?
They would allow it. Listen, I am in an apartment now, but when I lived, you know, in Dundas, Ontario, which is quite...
Some beautiful homes there.
Gorgeous there.
I've done work there.
You could not build a modern home in downtown Dundas.
Was there architectural control? Why couldn't you?
Because it had to fit in with the neighborhood.
So there was architectural control.
Absolutely.
If there's architectural control, that
well,
is
I don't know what that means. All I know is that in my neighborhood, you couldn't build a monstrosity.
So is there architectural?
Richwood Park has that. Do you know Richwood Park?
St.
Clair
yeah.
Beautiful area.
Yeah, St. Clair
yeah.
Bathurst.
You have to go through a committee
Good.
Of neighbors. But there's a modern home there. There's several. I did a modern
Are there?
Home there.
Did you?
But
and did you run into all kinds of problems?
Yes.
Did it keep within the neighborhood?
That neighborhood, the guys who run that committee, there's one guy in particular who lives in a very ugly modern house.
Right.
And he's an architect.
Right. But he thinks it's a beautiful home. See, my uncle's an architect,
yeah.
okay? I always thought he had a beautiful home. But I look at it differently from the outside to the inside functionality. Because
right.
when he had the home built, which was back in the 70s, it was
right.
beautiful and functional and modern.
Right.
But that was in the 70s. So even though he's
yeah.
done some renovations, it really is an old-looking but beautiful.
So good modern architecture will stand the test of time. The great modern pieces of architecture. Frank Lloyd Wright's Falling Water, my opinion, the best piece of American architecture, residentially, still looks modern today.
Mm.
And any of those great architects who did beautiful modern houses. Now, trendy is going to go out of style.
Yes, of course.
But modern...
What'd you call it?
Trendy architecture,
oh,
which you're
trendy.
Seeing a lot of today.
But it depends on the...
I want to know which ones yeah. are going out
so
of style.
So in certain areas of the city, trendy... architecture is the way to go. But in like when you're talking about areas like Rosedale
so.
Or whatever, you that older style has got, you couldn't, could you put a super modern home on one of these streets or Old Forest Hill Road or places like that?
Why not?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Variety?
You're the architect.
So,
I'm the podcast
okay,
host.
So variety is great, isn't it?
I don't know. Is it okay to do that?
In
do you
my
get the
opinion?
Neighbors up in arms going, what are you building this square monstrosity when you've got beautiful stone, you know, whatever.
But you can have a beautiful square, not monstrous.
You'd only know when it was completed. You would only know once it was done and you'd go, oh. Because
a lot of
Drake
people
is not going to his
now.
Neighbors going, here, do you like to take a look at my plans? Here's what I'm planning on building in the neighborhood. Drake doesn't do that. He doesn't go, is it okay if I build this here? He builds it. And then when it's done, and you're the neighbor, you go, oh, okay.
But Mark, good point, because people are afraid. Toronto is a very traditional city. If we were out in Vancouver, we wouldn't be talking like this. So everyone's worried here about who's going to buy the house after them. So, oh, we got to design the house for the next people
who
buy
it. What do
you mean? That's a very interesting point.
What do you mean?
Toronto is a boring city in that respect.
Oh, yeah.
You're telling me that someone moves into a brand new house or a house they just bought, and they're thinking, we've got to, so when we move in 5, 10, 20 years, it's got to be for the next person, as opposed to wanting to live in a house that you want to live in, that you love, and you don't care about.
Every client, almost every client,
that's
I should say.
Sick.
There are clients who say, I don't care, I want a one-bedroom house,
right.
10,000 square feet. Okay, it's going to be hard to sell. But most of my clients will say, well, I got to think about
resale value.
And resale the agents value. Are telling them, oh, don't build modern because you'll never sell it.
Really?
Right. Yes. And nowadays in Toronto, we have to be concerned with Asian purchasers. Feng Shui is a very big thing.
Yeah.
Most... Only really Asians believe in that.
That's right. You can't put a bathroom over the front door.
You cannot. Most people don't know that one. That's impressive.
I know that because
Do you know why?
Is it obvious? You don't want to
You cannot
poop on
defecate
head?
On the on master's head. They only care about the master's
okay.
head.
Okay. I figured it was something like that because we had a bathroom over the front door. And
I am a feng shui expert without being trained. Without
Are
I have
you?
No certification.
You have to be.
I know a lot about it.
You have to, though.
So everyone's worried. Okay, I can't have a door opposite my front door at the back because an Asian won't buy that house.
Because you can't see right through.
I hope that's not derogatory. That word
that,
Asian.
Right?
No, of course it isn't derogatory. But if you were.
Politically correct.
But look, if you know that there are going to be a good number of buyers looking in this area and they happen to be of Asian descent, why wouldn't you build something that when the time came to sell it, it wouldn't be... In other words, if your address happens to be 46 or whatever the number...
44 would be
44,
bad. Anything
right
bad.
So if you're there, so you know that no matter how beautiful your house is, an Asian is not going to buy that house because if they subscribe
the
to that
number,
that number 44.
But you can
whatever.
Put the number in the price. Right.
The
number in the price,
or you can get an address change.
Right,
like
they go to town council for that reason. Like there was a house in Markham right beside Angus Glen Golf Course, which is a beautiful location,
gorgeous. Yeah.
But the problem was the house's number was 4. And 4 means death.
Yes, it
and
does.
And so, you know, that couple who bought the house got a number change.
So now 4 means...
We do that a lot.
If 4 means death, does that mean they don't travel the 400, the 401? I mean,
that's not how it works.
What if you live on the 4th... Can you live on the 4th floor?
Tell us how
no,
it works,
because
Phil.
It's the 5th floor.
No, it's...
In elevators in Asia?
It's the upper
3rd
floor.
There's no 13,
floor.
There's no 4s on any of the
there's
floors.
There's no 4 in Asia in the elevators.
Nothing with a 4.
I love it.
There's no 13.
That's great.
What's the foundation to this belief of round 4?
It means death. It sounds like the word death, right?
The number 4 sounds like the word for death, which is more Southern Chinese. So, sei, tong sei. I'm Southern Chinese by coincidence, so I know what you're talking about. But ironically, where my dad's from, which is slightly to the east by a couple hundred K, they actually think 4 is a good number. For a different meaning.
That's crazy. I remembered that part because, you know, when we sold one of our houses, it was a 4. It was like, well, how come is it? Oh, well, no, you got the wrong number.
But it also reflects
people's
tastes.
But it's such a nice house, and everything else about it was
great.
But
it reflects people's tastes because the thing is, in Woodbridge, you tend to have a lot of houses with Roman columns.
Yeah.
Because it seems to be the style. That's what the people want.
2 columns is bad. There's 2 candles in the death ceremony.
Oh, my God.
2 columns is bad. But 3 or 4 is fine.
One of the houses we looked at, the balconies had columns, the front door had columns, everything had columns, and it was like, why? But apparently it was a good price.
Crazy.
As an architect, do you ever end up designing something that you don't like?
Oh my God, yes.
Okay.
and I got to tell you, when my clients have feng shui experts, it kills the design. It's like I'm designing the house with my hands behind my back and the pencils in my mouth. This room has to be there. He has to face this when he wakes up in the morning. When he's peeing, like
where's
it's
the nearest river?
Awful. Yeah. It's awful.
Wow.
Awful. And yes, I mean it's my client's house. I have
That's
to do what right. they ask me
That's
to.
That's exactly right.
And so I don't know. I don't love every project.
Yeah.
And
well,
it's terrible. It's a bad feeling.
That's too bad. Hey, listen. You know we're going to have you on again because there are so many questions about art. And also now when I go walking through my neighborhoods, there's always questions that I have. You know now I can go. Geez, you know I got to write this down because next time I see Lauren, I got to ask him about this or that or just certain things that. When you see a house or a neighborhood, you know, there's always something that sticks out there that goes, I wish I would have thought of that, or that's horrible. How did they come up with that. But now that you tell me that when you design certain homes and you're not happy about it, right? You're grudgingly like, oh, Jesus.
Like there's such a thing as an ugly house.
Yeah, like you don't want to see it.
You can't dictate
it. But the thing is, you don't want to see it when it's finished. When you drive by with your kids, you don't go, hey, see that one over there? That's daddy designed that. Whereas there's other ones where you go, see that one over there? Yep, daddy designed that one.
This is true.
Okay, so listen. So we're going to have you on again sooner than later because I have a lot of questions. But since you're a new guest on the show, we thought that a little quiz, a little game, to find out more about Lorne.
A little hazing that we're doing.
Find out a little more about Lorne and a little more about Liz and Phil at the same time. Not at all.
Not at all. Okay.
So what happens?
Do we need the buzzer?
No.
For the dinger?
No, there's no right answer.
Do I have to answer?
I'm going to get it anyway.
There's no right answer. There's no wrong answer. Right?
There's always a right answer.
No, there isn't because it's a questionnaire. It's not a...
And I have to be truthful.
You got
to
be truthful.
Well,
so this is for you, Liz, and Phil, okay? Mm. I've got 17 items here. Wait. You're going to tell me if yes or no, all right? Yes or no. Have you ever woken up drunk? Yes or no?
Oh, yeah.
That's a one for Lauren. Liz?
No.
Come on.
No,
Phil?
I haven't.
I have never been drunk.
Phil, just
wow.
Answer.
Phil.
Impressive. Impressive.
Phil, just answer the question. Have you ever woken up drunk?
I can't answer it.
Why
are
we answering this again?
By the way,
the
hangover is way better. There's no hangover if you're still drunk.
There you go. So, because what this does is it allows me to profile everyone and get a better idea of exactly what they're
being
about.
Profiled. And I thought that people doing that to people anymore.
Well, the listeners want to know.
All right.
They want to know a little more.
Okay.
Question number two. Have you ever kissed on a first date? Liz? Kissed
probably.
Lauren.
It's been a long time.
Of course.
And Phil?
Oh, why not?
Kissed
on yes.
Wow, okay.
Have you ever, Lauren, tried to cut your own hair?
Yes.
Oh.
It was bad.
Wow.
Liz?
No.
Phil?
No.
I think Lauren's winning. Okay.
Okay. Have you ever, Liz, sung karaoke?
Oh, sure.
That's a... Lauren, have you ever sung karaoke?
Yes, but I never should again.
What'd you sing? Do you remember?
I just have a bad voice. Terrible.
But do you remember what you sang?
I was probably drunk, so no.
Oh, okay. It was in the morning that you woke up drunk.
In front of audiences, in front of colleges, in front of my in-laws. Oh,
so Christ. The answer is yes. So everybody sung karaoke.
Phil's the singer.
Right. Phil, have you ever been on a fad diet? A fad diet?
Yes, by mistake.
What was the diet?
As a kid, we were on low fat. No matter what, it was low fat.
So you're on a low fat diet?
Yeah.
That's not a fad. Was that a fad diet?
It was when everyone wanted to slim pills and things like that.
Oh, right. Probably, yeah.
Lauren, have you ever been on a fad diet before?
Sure.
And what was the, like, Dr. Bernstein's?
Or
was
I'm just trying not to eat a lot of carbs.
The Long Island. That's not a fad diet, though. Fad diet, sure it is.
Atkins. Low carb diet?
Yeah,
sure. I know the name.
You guys don't know what
all
fad
diets are fad diets, except for maybe a Weight Watchers, which is just watching everything that you eat.
Like the South Beach diet is a fad diet. That's a fad diet, Dr. Bernstein. Okay. All right, fad diet. See, I thought a fad diet was like you only cleanse and eat lemons for 6 weeks.
That's what I was thinking.
That's like a fad diet.
Or, you know, cayenne pepper and lemon juice or that cabbage. That boiled cabbage diet. My answer is no, too.
All right. So,
anybody's interested.
Yes. That you've never been on a fad diet. Okay. Nor have I. Have you ever, Lauren, have you ever posted on social media while drunk or stoned?
No.
Liz, have you ever posted on social media while drunk or Phil?
Never been either, so no.
Mark?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whoa. Did you live to regret it?
Luckily, I deleted it in enough time. It was just a stupid thing to do. And it's when social media first started back in 2005.
So on MySpace.
Before we knew it could destroy your life.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, here's an easy one. Lauren, have you ever ridden in a limousine?
Yes.
Liz, have you ever ridden in a limousine?
Of course.
Phil, have you ever ridden in a limousine?
No, I'm poor.
What?
I'm poor.
You've never ridden in a limousine?
Never.
Okay. No.
You're hanging out with the wrong people.
Get Phil a limousine ride for a wedding gift, Liz. Yeah. We're going to get him a limousine ride.
Okay.
Lauren, have you ever lied about your age? Have you ever lied about your age?
Yes.
Okay.
Why?
Probably the other way. When I first started out, people thought, oh, you're so young. So I probably lied.
So you were young and you added a couple years to your age to look...
Yeah, probably.
...make yourself appear older?
Yeah.
So shallow. What about you, Liz?
Yeah, to get into bars when I was too young.
Oh, right.
I even redesigned my driver's license.
Right. Phil, have you ever lied about your age?
No, because people thought I'm too young for my age. So it's the opposite. Right. They still card me at the
end. Phil's got a baby
face.
You're
telling me when you were six, you didn't try to be eight. Never. You never tried to be older.
Did you?
No.
Right?
I liked who I was.
You wanted to be treated as an adult, so you tried to add it a few years.
I liked who I was. Okay.
Phil, have you got a tattoo?
Nope.
Lauren, tattoo?
No.
Liz, tattoo?
Oh, boring crowd, no.
Wow.
How about you?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm afraid, wow. afraid of needles.
Well, that's, yeah.
Who isn't?
Yeah. Phil, yeah. have you ever...
I don't know anybody who goes, I love needles. Yeah. I feel like I needle love getting now. My blood taken and out.
Junkies, maybe. Yeah. Phil, have you ever made or been part of a prank call? Be honest.
Yes.
All right. Ding. Lauren, have you ever been part of a prank call?
Yes.
I think I'm sure I did it when
Liz?
I was a kid. I'm sure it.
You have?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure. I used to make a living out of it. You can just call people up and say, why is your refrigerator running? Yes. Oh, you better stop it. Then hang up the phone. All right. We're all animals. Phil, have you ever ridden a horse?
No.
Oh.
I'm named after a horse. I'm named after a horse lover.
Lauren, have you ever ridden a horse?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Yes. It's fun. We'll get you a horse ride for your wedding.
That horse.
A limousine.
Drive by a horse.
Driven by a horse.
Lauren, have you ever been in a helicopter?
Yes, just recently.
Hey!
Oh, why were you in a helicopter?
Great Barrier Reef.
Wow.
It's better than taking the boat back.
No kidding.
Yes.
Wow, cool. How about you, Liz?
Yes, I have. When I was working on E! Now, the entertainment show, we were covering the one of the Star Wars films were opening, and I was in it's now a CTV helicopter, but I went up to shoot with a cameraman, shoot down the massive amount of crowds. And I'll tell you, being in a helicopter is amazing.
It's cool.
Yeah.
It's, for me, it's so quiet. It's like, I felt like I was in a little bubble, floating versus flying.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Didn't find it quiet.
Well, I had headphones on. Maybe that's why it was quiet.
Phil, have you ever been in a helicopter?
Not a helicopter.
Would you like to go in a helicopter?
Not really, no.
We're going to get Phil helicopter ride, a limousine ride driven by a horse. Okay.
As someone who spent a lot of time in a helicopter on very cold mornings doing traffic,
You did traffic?
I did.
I didn't know you did traffic.
CGFM 96.
Let's hear your traffic report. Do it in English.
I can't. In English.
You did traffic at French,
The Mercier Bridge, Flamboway, Champlain Bridge, Jacques Cartier Bridge, avoid the 20, and the Louis Hippolyte Lafontaine Tunnel going to Boucherville, very slow. Met westbound, slow.
Very good.
You know, yeah, it was all slow.
Stay home.
Slow. All right.
Okay.
Phil, have you ever been in an ambulance before?
No.
Lauren, have you ever been in an ambulance before?
Unfortunately, yes.
You have been?
Oh.
Yes.
Liz, how about you?
No. Well, no. They come to the school, my kids' school sometimes at special events, and you get to go in.
Not the same.
Not what he meant.
That's what I figured.
No, so you okay. And now, why were you in an ambulance?
Wasn't feeling well. The Millennium New Year. Went to, the heart was racing.
Oh. Really?
I was fine, but they never found anything, but it was scary.
Yeah.
What was it, stress? What was it?
I think it was stress. I had just moved into a new house, and it was not finished.
That's got the divorce stuff
Say no
there.
More. Say no more.
That's awful.
I've never been in an ambulance. Don't want to be either. Okay, Phil, have you ever gotten a piercing? No. What are you laughing for? It's possible.
Do you want me to pierce you now?
He hasn't been drunk.
Oh, okay.
Lauren, you ever had a piercing?
No.
Yes, and in fact...
I didn't even ask.
I got my ears pierced when I was younger, when my parents gave me permission. They would not give me permission to pierce them again, so I did it myself.
Ow.
I believe I might have been the first guy to have a piercing on television news kind of a thing, sports. Because I had my ears pierced. Well, I had my ears pierced when I was 18.
Did you have one or both?
Well, I had both originally done.
Which is, I don't get that.
I didn't either at the time.
Are you a pirate now?
No, but I, no, I was 18.
What is that?
I don't know.
I was 18 and I was drunk and stoned, I think, and I got them both done. But I ended up only using the left ear, and I wore a stud earring for a number of years when I was doing television until one day the guy at Hockey Night in Canada said, you have to take that out. And I said, why? He goes, we don't wear that on Hockey Night in Canada. And I went, well, you do now. And he's like, no, and he would not allow it. And he literally grabbed my earlobe and tried to take the thing off.
Really?
Yeah, this was in, I'm going to say around 1986 or 87.
You know, they can't do that. As of like now, 2018, that's finally, you can't do that.
Get your hands off me. And he says, well, I can't let you on because this is Hockey Night in Canada. And
wow.
Interesting.
So that was that. Here's a great question. Phil, have you ever been on TV?
Yes, quite a few times.
Lauren, have you ever been on TV?
I have.
Why?
I was on Real Renos, and I guess I've been on TV for other things, but I was on a show.
You got a face for TV. Yeah. Liz?
You're asking me that question?
I have to.
Yes, I've been on television.
Ding yourself.
stinging. Oh, my bell broke.
And me too. That was the other one was for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that was
okay.
for you.
Liz, have you ever donated to charity?
Oh, God, yeah.
Lauren, have you ever donated to charity?
Yes.
Ding, ding. Phil, have you ever donated to charity?
Yes.
Me too. And finally, Phil, have you ever gone camping before?
Yes, and it was horrible. It was the last time.
Yes, it's always horrible, but the stories are great after. Yeah.
Yes, it was horrible, and I keep telling myself I'll never do it again.
Well, that ends this quiz.
How about you?
I've been camping many times
before.
Do
you love it?
No, I don't love it. No, I definitely don't love it. Okay. So I couldn't really keep score. Anyway, we now know more about Lauren and Ward Phil
one.
And Liz
yeah.
and me than we all ever wanted to know, and that concludes the quiz. So, congratulations, you're all normal.
Thank you. Thank you for playing with us, Lauren. It's a pleasure having you on. That's Lauren Rose. He's one of Toronto's finest residential architects. And what's your website?
LaurenRose.com.
That's easy.
It's really yeah. pretty easy.
That is easy. Is that your real name?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
I was called Lorny as a kid.
We're going to come up with some. Lorny, we're going
to
come up with some really interesting.
You're not allowed to call me that anymore.
Interesting questions about homes and architecture and stuff like that.
I'd like to talk about trends next time you come back.
Yeah,
okay?
We're looking forward to it. Great. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
So thank you. And thanks to all of you for listening. Take it away, Phil Hong.
NFI is brought to you by Cameron's Brewing and is produced from the Humble and Fred Studios. For Liz West and Mark Hepscher, I'm Philip Hong. Thanks for listening. Roseville, Michigan. I once gave some money to a Hooters waitress once in Roseville, Michigan. That's a very long story.
Was that the charity?
did you get a receipt?
I did.